All right. So this is what you can read. I'm trying to give you somehow motivation, what it is that we're trying to do. And there's a fairly brief description of the computational matters. When one thinks about the actual manuscripts or papers that hopefully are going to appear, there are two here listed, then about half of the page numbers goes into a long appendix that describes the proposal distribution and the updates of the MCMC, which are really very, very elaborate. The examples are divided into two categories, unlinked markers and linked markers. So a free combination in the first case, which is a simpler case, and then linked markers in the second case. I was struck by Andy Clark's remark in his first talk, I believe all of you attended, when he said that if you actually have SNP data of the type that he had and described maybe 500,000 SNPs, then you can, by looking, tell apart or say who people are so up to fourth cousins, I think he said. So we're not trying to compete with Andy here at all. And if you think about the title, Estimating Genealogies, so we're not making any claims about what is the true genealogy, let alone what is the true gene flow in a given pedigree. So it all is essentially a means to an end, and or possibly to several ends. And the ends are, in some sense, could be described as what are the parts of the genome that these people seem to be sharing based on the marker knowledge that we have. Now, having started this topic and this work long ago, people didn't have 500,000 SNPs. It was more common to have microsatellite data, maybe something like 30 markers in some chromosomes. But anyway, of that order. I think, and I want to emphasize that already now, that there are still, I think, many valuable data sets that are based on corresponding marker data. So in human genetics and maybe in a few areas, really the labs are putting out huge amounts of markers. But still, I think much of the, of course, in many organisms, actually, even the marker map is not there yet. And so we are assuming that there is a marker map, and we are essentially using the Haldane metrics to work out things. And then basing the analysis, there's really no restriction sort of technically what the polymorphism is, but for computation reason, obviously, it is restricted. Okay, so we consider a bunch of individuals living here today that would be described as present generation. And we are actually considering the inverse problem. How did this come about? So this is, of course, a Bayesian approach. Bayesian is walking backwards. And walking backwards is harder than walking forwards. You may try it. And the same thing is also here. So if you're doing forward simulation, so generating populations, demography, and then dropping alleles, anybody can do that very, very fast. But if you actually try to do the opposite, so you have a bunch of children, you don't know what actually belong to the same family even, you just mark their genes, and then you're trying to actually get some idea about how this came about, then what you need to do is first, you have to make these individuals, think of them as children. They have to look for parents. Okay, now, they might first go about, I'll come to that after a while, they might go about and look at one child, tries to find a father. Now, these people don't have any labels, so take anyone. Next child has to find a father also. Maybe if he or she chooses the same father, they become at least half siblings, and so on. So this is the way we go. And after a while, you see that, of course, once people have, the kids have chosen parents, then also the inheritance is done in the reverse direction. So they actually give the alleles to their parents, not the other way around. So here's some motivation still. I think the main motivation, I said again, is that there are very many problems that are essentially one way or another connected to what parts of the genome do the individuals in the data share. And so that's the thing that we're trying to find out. That's more or less slide saying that. So different things like perhaps I think primarily gene mapping was the idea. Of course, IBD, identical by descent, is a particularly important thing, because then even if you know that two individuals inherited a certain marker gene from a particular ancestor, then if there is actually a causative allele somewhere nearby, it's also possible, or even likely, if it's very close, that they also share that one. Haplotyping is, of course, something that may and is often used as a kind of pre-processing method to arrange the genomes, to do the face determination at the beginning, and there are programs like FACE that do that usually very well, but as some kind of a test for our method, we're actually trying to see also how we can do that. There are, of course, very good methods to do these things, but they have so explicit methods are doing the backward reconstruction, but they usually are limited to sizes that don't really reach out quite as far as what is typically needed in realistic data sets. Also, approximate methods are available. Locky, for example, is used by many Salmon Heath's software. Now, very often, I think, in human genetics in particular, it's actually so that we have small pedigrees. So there are families. Often, ascertainment has been made in such a way that certain carrier of a disease has been identified, and then some relations have been collected, like siblings and parents, possibly grandparents. Sometimes it's an extended family. Now, our goal actually is to later complement the software a little bit so that we can actually fix some pedigrees. And so we should not be asking questions where the answer is known. But for the time being, we just think that there is a number of individuals, and we don't know at all how they are related. What struck me when I first was kind of introduced to gene mapping was this idea that either people say that we have fixed pedigrees, and then people do linkage analysis, or, and I think it's still said in many papers, that when you do association analysis, people are unrelated. Now, I couldn't really understand what it means, because I thought we are all related in various ways. And maybe, in fact, it could be kind of determined, if it's not known, to what extent we are related. So these families or extended families are a bit like islands. And so if we go back some number of generations, and how far we need to go, of course, depends on the case, then we do find IBD parents. And IBD parents could be found, of course, in different parts of the genome. You will find different connections. So how far you need to go to the past to find such identical by descent alleles. So in some sense, this is trying to bridge a gap between the association analysis and linkage analysis, being perhaps now closest to LD mapping. I guess terminology is a bit vague here. Okay. I think I've more or less described this already. So we have linked or unlinked markers. Unlinked means easier computation. And then we are thinking about reconstructing genealogies. But it's important to also notice that, for example, well, the genealogy as a term can be used in very different timescales. In Jotunheim's talk, for example, yesterday, the timescale was maybe up to millions of years in evolution. Here, we are actually thinking about generations. In for example, in humans, you could think that doing 10 generations maybe covers 250, 300 years or so. So the things that may happen are, of course, entirely different. And I might also emphasize already now that what we actually have is this demography and the meiosis, that is, gene flows within given pedigrees that are being modeled. There are no mutations. So when we are thinking about the sort of random mechanisms or probabilities here, the driving forces behind, it is mating and meiosis, or family formation and meiosis that we are describing. What makes this problem hard is that we are actually keeping somehow the diploid organisms there. So when you think about mating, then indeed we describe the Mendelian, following the Mendelian ideas, and it's not just that we take chromosomes, and if you have a recombination, it doesn't happen quite like when you are merging in this ARG, which was described, for example, in Jotun's talk yesterday. It's a more difficult thing to do in the model. So in the end, we hope to really have a reasonable model with good mixing properties, and this has been tested many, many times, and I'll give you examples on how it seems to be working. Again, I would like to take you back to something that was mentioned earlier this week. It was actually Peter Green's talk and the discussion that followed, and Peter is maybe here. I warned him yesterday on the dinner table that I'm going to actually go back to what he said. I think Peter said something like, some approximation of this, that we can't really dream of saying something exact about these enormously large dimensional spaces. And if you think about the pedigrees and the gene flows, then depending on the size of the number of individuals, the markers, and the number of generations you go backwards, of course, the dimensions will vary. But basically, they are horrendously large spaces. And so we're not claiming really to know something about what happened seven generations ago or something specific. But what I think can be reasonably argued is that some of the things that we actually want to know, like where are some causative genes, or what particular parts certain individuals seem to be sharing in their genomes today, they are like projections from this enormous space back to the data we have at hand. But of course, it's not about the variables that we have observed, but the latent variables that we don't know. So that's the goal that we have. Okay, now something about the model. we have overlapping, non-overlapping, sorry, non-overlapping generations, so they are simply numbered. This is a model approximation, obviously. We're usually working with some numbers such as 10, so this time frame in human data, 250, 300 years, is being considered. This actually links somehow with the Finnish population history. Those of you who may have studied gene mapping literature know that Finland has a number of, it's a fairly homogeneous population on the whole, and there are certain isolates, so relatively small groups of population where people, perhaps something of the order of 60 to 100 chromosomes went there. So that divided by two, number of people settled in a certain area, and almost everyone living in the area is actually a descendant of these people. There's been, of course, some inflow, some outflow, but basically the original idea that we started with was this population isolate. Okay, I think I've said everything almost already. So we assume that we have known recombination fractions or genetic distances between the marker loci, and then we have actually determined the allele frequencies from some data. They are actually in the model. They are like fed into the founder generation. So you can think of doing allele dropping with these frequencies as when the prior of the model is being determined. And here's how it goes. So basically, of course, we can't have very many generations in this description, but there's a pedigree graph, there are the recombination events, and there are the founder alleles that are somehow fed from top and then dropped down to the present day individuals which are down here. So here's a sample, here's is somehow the population, and there are the founders. And you can see that this has now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations built on top of each other. So in the computations, we would typically work with 10. It's twice the height of this house. And the total probability is, in fact, can be described simply as a product of these probabilities here. Now, I already said something about this backwards walking. That's what we're trying to do. And then after a while, I come to these mating parameters. There are two mating parameters, and they also connect to some talk, actually the one by Peter Green, already mentioned. So, and here is why. Because Peter talked about stick breaking and polyurn schemes, and so we have to somehow model how the parents are found. So kids looking for parents looks a bit sad, but anyway, so going forward and having kids is much more fun. But here's how it can be done. Of course, this is imaginary, but can be tuned with the two parameters, and the two parameters can be estimated if you have like a couple of generations of data. Then there's a way from real data to come up, say, with maximum likelihood estimates of these two parameters, alpha and beta. So let's think that the kids are first trying to find a father. I don't know why we chose the fathers first. Usually the mother is known and the father may be missing, but this is this now. Nothing is real in this. And so that you can think that there's this kid who's looking for a father, and so three fathers have already been assigned, and so this father has one kid, this is two, this is one, sorry, four, and this is again three kids. Now, it might be argued that it's somehow a little bit more attractive to join or have a father that already has children. And then you can actually think about this polyiron scheme. If you don't remember it, it's like you have different colors in a bowl, so balls, and you lift one and you check the color, and then you put it back to the bowl and you add one more of the same color. So it's somehow what you've done is somehow strengthened, or there will be more of the same kind. And so if you have a large population and there was not this kind of thing, then you would often actually come up with a situation where everybody has a different father. But that's not the case so we have like an excess number of fathers maybe in a population, but they still form families, and the same fathers will have often more kids. And then by tuning these alphas, we can actually somehow try to describe the demography. So how many, I guess in many animal populations, one sire or one male, maybe dominant male, have very many, many, many children, and most are left without. Okay, having assigned fathers, we can then think about mothers. And so here you can see that that's a father, that's a mother, and so here actually this is a half sibling with these, they have the same mother, and here is somebody who's already been assigned a father and now is looking for a mother. And now you can think that the next logic is that if I'm considering a potential mother, then if that mother already has children with the father I was assigned to, then I most likely go to that family. So again, there's some reason to think like it's realistic, but somehow descriptive as a possibility. And again, by tuning this beta, you can somehow control the strength of this effect. So that's how we essentially do the demography backwards. And we have to give the total size of the population, so the potential number of candidates for parents in each generation. And that, of course, is something that will be different in different applications, and relatively small if you think about these cases where we have a population isolate, where the people in a certain area where perhaps early on only a few hundred and now are maybe of the order of 10,000 or so. So anyway, by controlling these parameters, you can see that typically rather different looking pedigrees are generated backwards. Okay, recombinations is another aspect this, and it's really we take that according to the classical Haldane Haldane map. You might say recombinations are independent and only sort of governed by the genetic distance between the marker loci. So it's a coin tossing with certain probabilities when you move from in the genome in these two chromosomes, whether you switch it or don't switch it depends on the genetic distance between the two marker loci. And so you essentially have this kind of obvious probability to govern that. We also assume, actually, typically in the founder generation, that this the genotypes of the founders are determined by on the basis of Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium, simply based on the allele frequencies that have been observed or estimated from other sources of data. But obviously, that could be easily changed, and we could fit in genotype frequencies as well. Okay. Now, this is to the chairman, yes, I'm still a Bayesian, but I mean, if you think about what is a posterior like, then this is a rather strange posterior, because you see, all this is actually prior. and that's a prior I already described, and this is the likelihood. So the likelihood is an indicator function. So that's the main problem, which we of course have in this allele dropping thing, that nothing ever matches. If you were to do a forward simulation, you'd never get a fit with the data that you actually have. So nothing would match with the observed data. That's why we are moving back backwards. This rather strange walk backwards. But that's why we actually have, when the MCMC is then working, then it's a very careful check how we can actually move in this configuration space so that we keep the observed alleles in the study individuals, we keep them fixed. Okay, I think I need to move forward rather fast now. So it's obvious, and several people have actually worked on this, that if you fix a pedigree, and there's a large pedigree, then MCMC is a notoriously difficult problem. So you can't make local updates because the chain is not irreducible. Here one could say that in some sense, working on a more difficult problem, where also the pedigree is not fixed, that gives you some flexibility, because you don't really have to claim that there's a certain pedigree just like that. But you can move both the pedigrees and so who was whose father and mother and children and so on concurrently with the gene flows. And it is then really the main thing why it's been so difficult has been in devising all these different types of moves in this space of configurations. A randomly chosen group of children chooses possibly new parents and transmit their alleles to these parents. So that's what I said. Inheritance goes backwards. All children of a fixed father or mother choose possibly new mother and father and transmit their alleles to her or him. Now that's almost the same, except that here now one of the parents is somehow kept fixed, and so we're trying to find a new companion to this father or mother that we already had. One child at a time chooses parents and transmits alleles. All children within the group jointly choose new parents and transmit alleles. And finally, pedigree is not being updated, but allele paths are proposed. Now, this is not something I'm able to describe in any detail, and would also involve notation that even, I mean, after so many years, I always forget what is Xi and what is Psi and what is all these letters that you need in sort of the bookkeeping. What is somehow fortunate here is that, well, it's both a blessing and a difficult thing, is that the dependencies are, I mean, they can be strong, but they're essentially Markovian. So if you think about knowing everything about children and parents, and you're considering updating something here, then you can forget about everything upwards and everything downwards. And also, if you go along in the genome, then everything is Markovian there because of this Haldane thing. So you don't have to somehow put everything into the memory, but you can also work out the reasonable proposal distributions. Now I will try to go a bit faster. Examples. Here's one where essentially we have 20 generations. They are like three population isolates. So think about first sampling founders. These are all alike. But then these live in region 1, these live in region 2, these live in a third region, and there are no matings or family formations between these three branches. So three islands all of a sudden. And then down here, we actually think, just to test the method, we assume that we actually have families where there are triples, so full siblings, and see if we can actually somehow distinguish the different types of hierarchy. So this is like 20 generations ago, and this is in the same family, and see what comes. Now, this is a relatedness matrix where the colors, so the light ones on the diagonal, you can see the individuals themselves, and then these are the three blocks that are of light color. Maybe it's, it's a bit time consuming to start looking at the numbers, but there are 90 individuals now, and the first group are numbered from 1 to 30, then 31 to 60, 61 to 90, and they are actually quite nicely placed into these three groups here. And moreover, you can see that actually the three siblings are down here, well, not always quite as clearly as here, but anyway, you can see that there's a hierarchy, so these are close relatives, and then you have to go backwards to find the links between the islands. So this seems to be, and I checked that yesterday actually, but I didn't find any sort of false groupings between the islands. Now, this isn't quite fair as a comparison to structure, but because the structure essentially always assumes that you have to sort of focus on a given level in a pedigree, whereas as we had these two different hierarchies or categories of relatedness. If you say there are three groups, then structure does very well. If you say there are 10, then you somehow lose the division into three. If you say that there are 30, then again, you don't really get, somehow those 30 perhaps come out in some sense, but you can't see the bigger structure divided into three. His is a bit more problematic, and we're currently debating whether we should actually put this in. In Finland, there is somehow Eastern influence and Western influence. In North Karelia was also mentioned in Andy Clark's talk when he was talking about the LD cholesterol degrees and how it could be somehow explained by certain SNPs. Now, East Karelia or North Karelia, this is now 31 unlinked microsatellite markers, and there is a then Western group, about 20 individuals in both, and there is a long time influence from Sweden, so across the Gulf of Bothnia. And in epidemiological studies, it's well known that these two groups are so there are many things that are more common in one and not the other. Now here we can't really very well separate the two. The more elaborate software then is linked markers, and you can see why. I mean the things are more tight. If you are linked, then of course recombinations are less likely to happen, and in a way it is good because you have somehow more information, but it's bad for the MCMC because that doesn't mix so well, and therefore in devising actual proposals that could ever be accepted, there are steps, for example, involving the Viterbi algorithm where you somehow use the Markovian underlying structure and then make very elaborate block proposals by using the Viterbi, and then have actually a chance of having them accepted is a metropolis step. Now, this is one more data set, 39 individuals divided into 13 nuclear families, and so we have these, this is the simulation thing. You see only the pedigree, of course you don't see the gene flows, so something dropped down from up there to down here, and then there are 20 markers, 10 alleles in each, and a certain recombination fraction. The question is, if you don't actually order these individuals in any way, so you lose all memory of how they were possibly related, can you reconstruct and find actually, for example, there are 13 nuclear families. Can you actually find the siblings and put them together? And the answer is quite good. So, again, there are these families connected here, by either, I mean, sometimes one parent, so they'd be half siblings. Sometimes they have both siblings. But it's quite actually faithfully follows what is up here in the known part. What then may become more hazy, of course, is how precisely are they related? I mean, for example, some individuals might be cousins, but of course it doesn't really matter whether they are paternal cousins or maternal cousins or what. So we're not saying that we know what happened. But as far as really the issue is concerned, we are doing pretty well. Haplotypes, I guess that's not so interesting. We can't really beat face, but we do about as well as face. And it's, of course, face is a fast method. This is slow, but you can see the switch distance converging, coming down rather nicely. IBD sharing, I think that is perhaps again more interesting thing to consider. One can, of course, think about that in different ways. I think I will not make that comparison, but here's one of the last slides I would like to spend a little bit of time on. This is actually a pair of siblings, and this is a pair of cousins, and these are from the sort of distant relatives from our population. The question of IBD, of course, it's a local one. So you consider some particular locus, you consider a pair of individuals, and either you actually, I suppose we knew truth, either they are coming from the same grandmother, grandfather, somewhere far away, same chromosome, or not. So that's the question of IBD. And if we now have actually, like here we have 20, so here we actually have the markers described here, and the true IBD status is by this dotted line described here. So you might ask, what is a 3/4 and what is 1? I mean, because of inbreeding, they can be actually so that the alleles in the same individual are even IBD. So there's a possibility like that. You can have so 3/4 and 1 and half and 1/4 and 0. And you can see that actually in these relatives, because they have the same parents, these are two full siblings, sometimes they are not at all related. And sometimes, even the degree is 1. Here are cousins, and then it goes away when you have the more distant relatives. So in a way, we can actually, it seems, accomplish something that we aimed at originally. Future work, well, I already mentioned that fixing some parts of a known pedigree is an obvious thing to do. We don't have that in the software yet. Then this actually fixing, it's just a side remark that if you fix the pedigree, then actually it may not be quite a trivial problem to place the known alleles in there, because you're not moving, you're not able to move the pedigree. You somehow have to fit in the alleles, and if you have real data and then you know it's possible because it happened, but then finding a solution is a non-trivial thing to do. And there's a paper by Matti and Dario fairly recent where this is a fairly fast algorithm has been published. Then future work. We don't have a phenotype model or QTL model, so in order to be really used in genetic mapping, obviously, if individuals share certain parts of the genome, that's like what we were trying to, or what we've accomplished, I think, in some way. But then putting in a phenotype model is an obvious part to add. Then we don't have any mutations here. So if two alleles are different, they remain so in the construction. So this is a short time span, maybe really 10, 20, depending on the computer power. But anyway, it's all the order of tens of generations. Of course, microsatellites are known to mutate also in such times, and we could elaborate on the model a little bit and let some such things happen. But really think about the sort of evolutionary time scale where the mutations come in. I think this is too elaborate as a model, and then somehow forgetting about the diploid chromosomes and starting to think about chromosomes about in the way that for example, had in his talk yesterday is a much more sort of tangible solution. Something about computation times. There are several ways. All these things actually have been done on a PC, but we also tested possibilities of either combining several pieces in parallel, and then there are different ways, of course. One is using when linking different computers, you can either think about doing simulation completely separately and then somehow averaging the MCMC, or you can think about, for example, using the computers in different temperatures and somehow loosening the for example, the recombinations a bit, and then somehow coming them down so that they would correspond to the measured generated distances. Yet another thing is to have all the computers work out and for a good proposal, and then trying to somehow trade their own proposals. And if the proposal is added, then you somehow switch to that computer and go on the simulation in that, until there's again some other computer that comes up with a nice suggestion, and then you somehow have a jump in the MCMC. Okay, that's the end. Our group, Dario, Mikko, and Matti. Thank you.